Our next case is Swift and Staley v. United States, number 22-1601. Counselor Cook, you have 5 minutes of rebuttal, is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, let's everybody get their water.
Sorry, a little parched today.
Okay, you may begin, sir.
Your Honors, and may it please the Court, my name is Danny Cook for the appellant Swift & Staley, Inc. There's a long procedural history of this case, which is important history, but the issue on appeal today is a singular issue, and it's a straightforward one, whether the Small Business Administration, the SBA's Office of Hearings and Appeals, I'm going to call that OHA, violated the law by finding Swift and Staley other than small based on a theory of affiliation through negative control. We've discussed in our briefs that OHA did violate the law with this finding, and the Court of Federal Claims should have reached that conclusion. There's several reasons for this. First, the party that initiated this litigation, the protester that challenged Swift and Staley's size in the first instance, said nothing about affiliation through negative control.
But that issue was brought up before, correct?
Respectfully, Your Honor, no. The protest was filed based on a theory that involved a regulation that the Court of Federal Claims subsequently found to be not applicable. So the initial basis for the protest that we obviously asserted that legal argument had no merit. The Court of Federal Claims agreed with us.
That's all the joint venture stuff, right?
That's right. That's the proportionate share, populated, unpopulated issue.
But what difference does it make? Are you saying that OHA can't look at the record or whatever the office below that the initial deciding people can't also undertake their own view of whether these people are small businesses or not?
Your Honor, they absolutely can, and they did not. So the second point here is that not only the protester did not raise this issue, but the area office, that's the body within the Small Business Administration that is by law tasked with investigating, looking, they reached no conclusions about...
Well, that's because they found against you on the other grounds, right?
Correct.
So they didn't reach this.
They did not reach it at all, and the OHA, at that point in time when we appealed, their legal obligation, their jurisdiction was
to... Here's the problem. Didn't you raise this?
Your Honor, you've brought up what is the crux of the issue. Did we, as the party whose size has been challenged, raise an issue for the purposes of the regulation that matters here, 13 CFR 134.316C, the regulation that says an OHA judge shall not...
I mean, you certainly suggested in your papers that you weren't also barred because of this negative limitation.
So, Your
There's
Honor...
an actual argument in your papers about this issue, right?
Your Honor, you are absolutely correct. There is a discussion, a meaningful substantive discussion. It was not in response to an allegation that had been raised. It was a response to illustrate the problems with the argument that had been raised. It was a...
So it was there. I really don't understand all this procedural jousting.
Sure.
Is there something you think would have put in the record on this?
Yes, Your Honor. Absolutely. That is the crux of the issue, is that let's say hypothetically, how should this have played out? The reference in our response to the size protest, the discussion that you just mentioned, had the area office believed that that was a relevant area to look into, they could have and should have asked us specific questions, given us a chance to respond and provide the context surrounding that operating.
What kind of information would you have put in that's not already there? And I know some of this stuff is confidential, so I'm not asking. But what kind of information? And did you tell the Court of Federal Claims these are the categories that if we had been given the opportunity, we would have told OHA and had the... the regional office consider it?
Yes. Yes to the answer to your second question. This was, we did discuss this in oral arguments at the court, the Court of Federal Claims. The answer to what would have been provided is, I think, well illustrated by one of the cases that we've cited in our briefs, Clement. And it talks about a situation where the plain language of an operating agreement might suggest that the parties have certain rights, but there can be countervailing things that are not in the plain language of that operating agreement. In that case, it was a corporate law in the state of Alabama that undermined one of the alleged rights that the minority party had. So,
but
in
you're
this,
not arguing anything that you could have raised to the Court of Federal Claims.
Your Honor, respectfully,
I was asking, did you specifically tell the Court of Federal Claims, if this had been properly raised, and if we were on notice, here is the 1, 2, 3 pieces of evidence, not legal argument, because you can make the legal argument to the Court of Federal Claims, evidence that we would have put in?
Your Honor, the answer is yes. There was a declaration by the company's president, who is actually here today, describing why the plain language of the operating agreement, when read, you know, on the four corners of the paper, does not explain the context and does not articulate why, as a practical matter, negative control cannot be exercised. It is not a situation where they had the right and didn't exercise it. It is quite literally the type of negative control that a minority owner, you know, can exert, a control over ordinary business actions, that the provisions in the operating agreement that suggested that they were ordinary business actions are not, in fact, in PMA's case, ordinary business actions, for reasons that, again, are not clear on the face of the operating agreement, but make a lot of sense when you hear the company president describe how this entity actually operates and what its purpose is. So that was something...
Just to be clear, Counselor.
Yes.
Isn't it the case that SSI expressly argued to the area office that SSI lacked negative control?
Your Honor, it is absolutely correct that
So with respect to the issue of whether OHA wrongly considered the negative control because it raised it sua sponte, if you argued it before, if you raised the issue before the area office, then I don't see a problem with the OHA considering that issue.
Your Honor, I would say I would agree with you if you consider our discussion of it raising the issue. And our position is that raising an issue in the context of this particular regulatory provision is not the party whose size is being challenged throwing out another basis for its size to be undermined. No, it's someone who is challenging the size bringing it up. So Akima could have raised the issue.
But I think you already said that the SBA people are not bound by the arguments from the other company raising the size protest. So they can raise arguments on their own. So of course it makes sense for you to come in and say, well, yeah, that company's wrong on the arguments it raised, but we're aware of these other things that you sometimes use. So we're going to say those don't qualify either. Why isn't that raising the issue in the records?
So, Your Honor, if I may, the analogy that I would put out is we absolutely threw out a fishing line that if the area office had bit that bait, we would have raised it. In other words, it's a raised issue when it becomes a issue in dispute.
But when you cast that fishing line, you can't later complain that the OHA wrongly considered the issue. You already raised it.
I mean, the regional office,
it's a local area office.
I'm sorry, we call the regional offices in the VA stuff regional offices, so whatever the...
We call it area regional.
Area office. But they didn't need to address that argument because they ruled against you on another thing. And maybe I think they could have said, oh, and in support, we also disagree and find negative control.
And had they said that, we would be having a very different discussion now.
Why is it necessary that the OHA is not confined to just the rationale raised by the regional offices? Isn't it allowed to look at anything that was raised before the regional office? Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. What if the other company had raised both arguments and the office had said, the area office had only ruled on the joint venture?
Then it would absolutely be raised. Absolutely. The OHA...
Same record, same evidence.
If Akima's protest had a footnote that said, in the event we're wrong on this issue that they ultimately become wrong on, we also note affiliation through negative control, that would have raised the issue. But Akima didn't do that. And the area office, although they absolutely could have responded to what we put in that response... And said,
but again, they didn't need to because they'd already found the basis to declare you not small.
They did not, correct. And so what
I'm really troubled about this is the regulation you're relying on is OHA's regulation about, you know, not considering issues not raised.
Sure.
Why is it, you know, why are we going to care whether they think an issue was raised or not? They looked at it and they said it was raised sufficiently for us to make a decision on that. We're going to make the decision. This is procedural stuff at there. If they thought it hadn't been raised sufficiently, why isn't it up to them?
Because of the prejudice, Your Honor. Because
that's a different question now. You have to. So we've been jousting about whether it's raised or not.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to show me why there's prejudice and why that the OHA's decision and then subsequently the Court of Federal Claims decision that it wasn't arbitrary and capricious is, you know, infected with prejudicial error.
Sure. So as to why do we care about what OHA does and what OHA decides, it's because OHA, as a quasi-judicial body, is subject to procedural rules, laws that bind them.
They can waive their procedural rules, probably.
Your Honor, I'm not aware of any statute or regulation or case law
that says
that.
Well, maybe because it's an administrative regulation, they can't. We certainly, as a court, can decide issues that aren't necessarily raised to us. We don't have to apply waiver, or we don't have to apply forfeiture. But
certainly.
Again, they found it was raised.
So
the documents are the documents.
Mm-hmm.
What's arbitrary and capricious about the view based upon the record here?
What's arbitrary and capricious, Your Honor, is that the procedures are laid out to protect the due process and structure.
So you're not talking about the merits of the decision?
The merits of the decision are a secondary issue. We do believe, obviously, if it were to be explored by the area office at the level of detail that we think it should have, we believe the appropriate conclusion would have been no negative control for the reasons that are explained in the declaration from the company president that never got admitted. So the critical threshold issue is whether it was appropriate to treat our discussion of this topic as raising the issue. And we firmly believe it was not, because raising an issue in the context of the OHA case law on this, and there is a lot of OHA case law on this, is bringing up a basis for finding a company other than small, and it's an allegation, it's a count. It's not a discussion by the party defending itself. The government has not cited, and we are not aware of, a single case where an issue was raised by the party whose size is being challenged. And logically, when you think about it, okay, a party whose size is being challenged and puts out, like we did, a defense to a hypothetical allegation that was never made. Yes, we open the door for that issue to be raised. We open the door because it's in the record, and a party who is in that posture trying to find us other than small, the protester or the area office, could have bitten that bait, and then we've got a situation where we can provide additional responses, additional documentation. It becomes a raised issue.
Okay. You're into your rebuttal time.
Oh, Your Honor, then if no further questions, I'm going to save those extra minutes. Thank you.
Counselor Weiser. Is it Weiser? Wizer?
Wizer.
Wizer.
May it please the court. I'd like to start just by making sure the record is clear from some of Judge Hughes' questions. The area office, in its very first decision, did address affiliation. And we can look, I'm happy to point to the record citations, but it's between Appendix 3838, 3840, and then there's some of the sort of boilerplate scope and standard of review that it cited in 38, 36, and 37. But what the area office did in the very first decision was it looked at the argument that Swift and Staley had presented. It said, okay, we've got kind of two things going on here. One is there a joint venture issue that we have to worry about? And then two, if not, we have to consider affiliation, as Swift and Staley's own argument to the area office suggested. And the area office cited specifically to those portions of the arguments that Swift and Staley raised. It cited to the specific affiliation regulations related to control, including negative control. And then it gave a decision. It said that the parties are not otherwise affiliated, and it listed at least some of the elements, including the minority ownership percentage and things like that. So the area office, we will admit, it was not as thorough a discussion as a joint venture piece, but the area office did decide the issue of negative control. It was in the first OHA opinion where that didn't get decided because the only issue OHA reached was the joint venture regulations. It affirmed the area office's joint venture application and said, yes, that was correct. It was correct for the area office to have said the joint venture regulations applied.
And that's what came up to the Court of Federal Claims.
And that's what came up first.
They disagreed, sent it back.
That's correct, Your Honor. And so then it went back to OHA. Now, I do want to point out before we move forward in the procedural history that at the time we were before the Court of Federal Claims first, Swift and Staley agreed with all of that. And so if we look at Appendix 4029, we look at the brief they submitted to the Court of Federal Claims in the first round of litigation. Swift and Staley, in the middle paragraph, made an argument to the Court of Federal Claims that said, if you agree with us, that SBA, I'm sorry, 4029, Your Honor. And so this was in the context of Swift and Staley's argument to the Court of Federal Claims in the first round, saying, if you agree with us that SBA got the joint venture regulation issue wrong, there is no need to remand because we have the alternative finding already in the record. We have the alternative finding from the area office that we're not affiliated, and so the court can simply reverse. And they said, as detailed in the area office's size determination, however, Swift and Staley's business relationship with Northwind does not otherwise create affiliation. They added a footnote, footnote 8, where they said this is a logical conclusion. We don't challenge SBA's determination on this point. And then they laid out all the same points they made to SBA below, starting from the very beginning of the case. It was only when that position and argument became inconvenient after OHA revisited that issue that Swift and Staley suddenly turned around and said, wait a minute, that issue has never been raised or decided. But back at the point in which it was advantageous for them from a litigation standpoint, they said the opposite. And the Court of Federal Claims expressly noted that point in its decision, said that was one of the key reasons it simply didn't find Swift and Staley's arguments credible the second time around, that this issue had not been raised by them in a substantive manner as they asserted below and as they assert to this court. And I would just make one other point on that, looking at the regulatory language itself as well. Section 121.1009 specifies the scope of what the area office is to review and the basis of its determination. Almost all of Swift and Staley's briefing here focuses on the first sentence, which says that the size determination will be based, or the first half of the sentence, the size determination will be based primarily on the information supplied by the protester or the entity requesting the size determination. But the sentence goes on. It says, and that provided by the concern whose size status is at issue. So the regulation is plain, that it's not simply what ACIMA said about the protest, it's also the information provided by the protester, which I think we're all in agreement here, included this argument about negative control. They submitted the operating agreement. They submitted the only scope of evidence that SBA needed and relied upon to make its negative control determination in the first instance to the area office because it understood, and subsection C says that the concern whose size is under consideration has the burden of proof. They understood that it was their burden not simply to address the joint venture allegation that ACIMA raised. It was their burden to prove their size. And the area office makes that decision clear in both instances. It's not a narrow question as to simply how are the joint venture receipts allocated. The question is Swift and Staley small? That was the question before the area office. That was the question where Swift and Staley had the burden to meet to prove they are small. And they attempted to do so, and they did so by addressing both points, the joint venture regulation and the possibility of affiliation through affirmative or negative control. And I would like to address a couple of the points about the prejudice piece, because I think that's another point where it's difficult to understand exactly how this would have come out differently or what additional evidence Swift and Staley could have submitted. They raised below and here a number of arguments about sort of this informal process for the area office. They could have had a back and forth. They could have had a conversation. We can see in the record at 3765 that that process did actually occur here as well. 3765 is an email from Mr. Cook himself to the area office representative, discusses a phone call that they had, says we're following up on this phone call in the discussion, says we want to reiterate and relay out our position so we make sure it's clear, and they go through the exact same points they made in their briefing. Again, they talk about not just the joint venture regulations, they also talk about the possibility of affiliation, the possibility of affirmative and negative control, and the references to the specific regulation that SBA ultimately applied. So that process was followed. They had that opportunity. There was some discussion about the declaration, about business practices. The Court of Federal Claims had that issue before. It definitively decided that was irrelevant because, as OHA found and as the regulation makes plain, what is the relevant standard to review is what information is in the operating agreement. And so extraneous declarations are not necessarily relevant. Beyond all that, there is procedures that let parties submit evidence to OHA that Swift and Staley used here. When OHA issued its notice saying that we believe there is an issue of affiliation through negative control, we want to ensure that the parties brief that issue, Swift and Staley responded to that and said, we would like permission to submit what we believe are amendments to the operating agreement so that the court has the full set of information it needs to make its determination on the basis of the operating agreement. And it did so, and OHA accepted that. At no point did they ever suggest that other information was necessary. They understood and exercised their rights to submit that information, and they chose not to.
Was part of what was submitted a declaration from the CEO?
It was not, Your Honor. So when they understood expressly that affiliation through negative control was going to be addressed by OHA because it provided an affirmative notice, and it didn't necessarily have to, but it was trying to put the parties on adequate notice of what it believed to be a relevant issue that had not yet been thoroughly discussed in the prior OHA proceedings. When it did so, Swift and Staley fairly immediately said, we would like to use our rights under the regulations to submit additional evidence that we believe is relevant to that point. And they did so. And what they submitted were what they purported to be amendments to the operating agreement. Now, it ultimately turned out they didn't actually amend the operating agreement, and so OHA didn't have to consider them. But they used that right. They never attempted to submit this declaration, which, again, just goes to the point that if they believed it was relevant at the time, they had the opportunity and just didn't use it. We believe that the issues here are clearly within this affirmative point about the procedural violation. We did brief the alternative issues about whether the underlying decision was arbitrary or capricious, whether the denial of their supplementation of the record was abuse of discretion. We're happy to rest on the briefs on those unless the court has any questions.
We thank you for your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, we'll restore your time to 3 minutes.
Your Honors, Mr. Wisser made a bunch of fantastic points. All of them miss a critical, critical, critical distinction in SBA OHA case law, and that is discussions about affiliation generally are totally different than affiliation through negative control. There is a case directly on point, Chu and Gassman, that we've cited throughout our brief, where an OHA judge, in reconsidering his own decision, says negative control, affiliation through negative control, is distinct from other types of affiliation. And so the statement that Mr. Wisser read from the area office's size determination talks about ownership interests, affiliation through theoretical stock ownership. That's what they could have looked at and apparently looked at. There is nothing in the record to suggest that the area office explored affiliation through negative control. All that is in the record is our discussion of it, which certainly created an opportunity for the area office to do what the area office always has the right to do, which is look into whatever they think is relevant, but nothing afterwards to suggest that they thought negative control was relevant. And OHA, after the Court of Federal Claims reaches its first decision and OHA remands it, the remand order from OHA to the area office says nothing about, hey, there were two arguments that you looked at. The first one the court just said is wrong. Now look at this negative control issue. There's nothing about that. If this was on OHA's mind, if this was an issue that had been raised Why was that not put in the order? The second size determination, again, where the area office has now been told that their understanding of the JV rule is wrong. If negative control had been an issue, why is it not in the area office size determination? It's nowhere. And the opportunity, the alleged opportunity we had, was not the same type of opportunity you get at the area office. OHA's job is to review size determinations for violations of fact, to see if there's clear errors of fact or clear error of law. That is what their jurisdiction is. It is not to bring up an issue that, again, was not in the amended or original size determinations. The operative legal document upon which these appeals rest, the size determinations, are silent on this issue. And so OHA says, we want you to brief this issue. And they don't give the opportunity for us to go through the process of knowing what the actual allegations are. There are no allegations before we brief this about what provisions in the operating agreement might give rise to negative control. There's nothing. There's a suggestion that we should talk about it. And so fundamentally, the issue here is that practically, we have not had the opportunity to address this issue at the body that is legally responsible for addressing it, the area office. Simple as that. If your honors don't have any other further questions, we finish our arguments.
Thank you. We thank all the parties for the arguments today. This court now remains in recess.